Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Jan Desper Peters, and I am the host of BTST Services podcast, Meeting You Where You Are. Meeting You Where You Are is more than a podcast. It's a movement where we share factual information that's relevant to real life issues. We have subject matter experts and real people who are sharing their real stories to help you on your journey for social, emotional, and physical wellness. Though the topic may not resonate with you at the moment, we believe that the nuggets that we drop will resonate with you on your journey to wellness. I am confident that you will get something out of this podcast, especially with the amazing guests that I have to help inspire, transform, and empower. So today we're going to be talking to some ladies who have just dropped a new book. And it's particularly interesting to me, and I hope to you, because they're going to be talking about how we fund college education. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Ms. Nicole Cole and Dr. Christy Chambliss Murray. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. So I was just saying that we're going to have a great conversation, and we're going to have some powerful nuggets that people can pick up no matter where they are on their journey for college funding. I've known Nicole Cole since she was knee high to a grasshopper. And in reading the bio of Dr. Murray, I realized she also is my soror. So I'm always super excited to interview my soror. Nicole and I met at the University of Maryland, and she has always been so dynamic. She's one of those people who, when you engage with her, even at a young age, you just know that she's going to do great things. And she's just been a wonderful mother. She's been a wonderful soror. She's been a wonderful businesswoman. And now she's an author. Nicole is the co-author of College Funding Strategies. I wish someone had told me. I said that so many times. The ultimate guide for scholars and parents. Nicole has worked nationally with families to create mostly late stage college funding plans since 2009 as a certified college funding planning specialist and is the owner of the College Money Team. Ms. Cole earned her master's in business administration in finance from Northwestern University Kellogg Graduate School of Management. And before graduating from the University of Maryland College Park, she worked as a peer counselor in the Office of Student Financial Aid. Ms. Cole has presented for numerous organizations to educate parents and scholars on the college funding and financial aid process. She is the dynamic mother of three beautiful and highly intelligent children and has worked directly with hundreds of families to create and implement custom college funding plans. And her partner in crime, Dr. Christy Chambliss Murray, is not only the co-author of College Funding Strategies, but the author of College Planning Strategies, I Wish Someone Told Me, and co-founder and CEO of Invest in Others, LLC. Her focus is on investing in youth, individuals, professionals, and organizations who desire to improve and grow. Dr. Murray is passionate about offering creative and innovative strategies and solutions in a purposeful way to influence change, circumstances, foster individual growth, and enhance organizational success in meaningful ways. In addition to her community service, Dr. Murray is an accomplished and results-driven executive with over 25 years of expertise in a plethora of fields, including education, college planning, budget formation, and leadership. Dr. Murray actually got her undergraduate degree in electrical engineering from Hampton University, has her MBA from Strayer University, also has a master's in computer information sciences and it has her doctorate in business administration. So you can see these highly credentialed Black Girl Magic women are here to drop some great information on us as we kind of work through this maze of what college funding looks like. So I always check in, since we're in a season of several pandemics, how you all are doing, how you're feeling, how you're coping with the pandemic. So Nikki, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good today. You know, it's a number of things going on with, so as you said, you know, two pandemics and getting two students off to, one to college and one to a campus, on campus high school, School of the Arts drama program, but both to campuses. So I'm sort of going through that. I lost two kids in a sense at one time. I have one here that trying to keep him busy and not bored with having his sister and brother going away, and also trying to hold myself back from calling them to find out what's going on, how's your day, you know, bugging them. So mentally, it's been a very emotional spring and summer. But holding up well, I think, between the book launch, already Chris, Dr. Mary and I have done some webinars. So interacting with families, students, and my other business doing financial planning, that keeps me busy and moving forward, so that I don't get as mentally exhausted from the emotional toll of everything that's going on. So I'm doing okay.
Okay. All right. All right. That's good to hear. Good to hear. Dr. Murray, how has this pandemic affected you? Are you doing anything differently? Or I always ask people, is there anything that you're doing where you would have normally said, I just don't have time to do that? And now you find that you have carved out some time to do just that thing that needed to be done.
Absolutely. So in general, I'm doing well. Everyone in my family is safe and healthy and in a safe place. So that's certainly at the forefront of my mindset and everything else that I'm doing. I have a student who is a rising sophomore in college and a rising senior in high school in the fall.
Okay.
And having them both home, starting back in March when everything started to shut down and everyone quarantined, it was probably the single most, the largest amount of time that we all spent concentrated under the same roof for such a large period of time that I can remember in their childhood. So that had, it was both a transition. It's very difficult to keep young people who are used to being able to bounce around and do different things to be able to come together and pause and pretty much stay close to home. So that was a challenge and a transition. But at the same time, when you ask the question, what have I been able to do differently since the pandemic? And I would say, one, relax. Two, spend more dedicated time with my son. And that has been outstanding. It has given me an opportunity to have conversations with them, to make plans with them at home without all the distractions that we all normally have every day, but really to get to know each other in a different way. And because we're in such, you know, close and close proximity, to really navigate how to deal with personalities, even within, you know, within our household differently. But I will say that it has been difficult just because of the emotional, the mental aspects of the pandemic.
Right.
And then add on top of some of the social injustices that have taken place.
Absolutely.
And having to talk to young people or just family members and to African-American sons about what it looks like when you're jogging and you lose your life, or if you get pulled over and somebody has a knee on your neck. And add that to the pandemic, the virtual learning environment they now are facing, and it can be quite a bit of change and to adapt to at one time. So having those difficult conversations and even admittingly so, recognizing that I don't always know what to say, mm-hmm. and I can't explain away some of the things that we're seeing take place, but also using this situation as an opportunity to be helpful and useful. As Nicole mentioned, we started a sorority, our Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated. My particular chapter, we reached out to other chapters, and we figured since many students were virtual, then now would be a great time to help rising juniors and seniors with one of our signature programs, the hashtag CAP, the college admissions process, to really start to push out useful information on college planning, college funding, and many other topics to help young people and their parents who are home and who have, we have a captivated audience right now. So while there's in the midst of a lot of difficulties, I made a conscious choice to look for the opportunities in it by helping and get out and communicating more.
That's wonderful. I mean, I have so many questions and people are going to say, well, Jane, this is not about you, but I mean, you know, I'm going to make it about me for a moment and then hopefully that'll help someone where they are. So when I was reading Nicole's bio, it says she's helped many late stage planning processes. And I would have found myself in that process because I was a single mother for a long time. But during that time, I always had my children in private school. And so my thing was like, I didn't have money to save for college because I was always paying for school. I've always paid for school. You know, I told my son the other day, my youngest son, I've been paying for school for 23 years. You know, and so, you know, it's not anything new for me to pay for school. And, you know, I just have paused because I didn't save appropriately for college. And then I look at all of these other, you know, people because I listen, you know, I'm a podcast host, so I'm pulling in all kinds of information. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them say, don't sacrifice your retirement for your child's education. You know, don't let your child go out of state. And so when my youngest child was looking at colleges, I was praying that he would get one, accepted to the University of Maryland, and two, that he would agree to go. One, he did get accepted. He didn't want to have anything to do with the University of Maryland because it was too close to home. So now he's in North Carolina and we're paying probably triple what the in-state tuition is. And, you know, just he's doing a wonderful, wonderful job. So I mean, this is probably something that you would suggest to parents. I call the school. I'm like, look, I have a black son who's doing really well in the engineering school. Can you all help me find some money? You know, and they found a little bit, but you know, just kind of help us what to talk about what the steps look like when you have children and what the ideal kind of scenario would be when you're planning and for your children to go to college, what that looks like.
So one of the things that we lay out in the book early on is this concept of stages of college funding planning. And so the first thing is you sort of have to think about where your student is in regards to their stage. So the earlier, obviously, that you can start planning for their potential future college education, and really we say college, but we talk about in the book different types of higher education beyond high school. So, yeah. You know, whether it's trade school, community college, college, or even, you know, sort of going beyond that into a master's program, it's a spin, just like any other financial goal. So the earlier you can start planning for that financial goal, the better. Right. But as I mentioned in my bio and typically, most people really don't start focusing until the late stage when it is definitely they see it's a necessity that, you know, their student is going to be going somewhere next that's going to cost them some money. And there's an urgency because there's not a lot of time anymore to be figuring it out, you know, how you're going to do it. That bill is going to come very soon. And they now understand that they need help. because this isn't typically something that they have done before. It's not a financial goal that that they've had to sort of plan for over and over again. Differently than, so you might have been in a different situation because you were paying tuition to a private school, but even still, a lot of times parents who are sending their kids to private schools, one of the reasons that you're doing that is because you're hoping that with that grounding and the extra resources or the type of education that they're getting, that they then get scholarships and money to go to the college that they couldn't get while they were in private school. So so I'll first say that, you know, there is early stage planning through sort of that, you know, when they're born through elementary school, then they're in middle school. But the late stage is from ninth grade or about eighth grade through 12th grade.
Right.
And we say late stage because, you know, there's some different things going on in late stage. So at that time, you've sort of taken off the plate opportunities to save in some of the traditional college savings plans, like a 529 plan, because you're going to be spending soon and that money can't stay there long enough to really give you that tax-free growth benefit. So you have to think a little bit differently on where you save. You still should save, but you have to think about where you save. And you're going to be soon going through a process whereby the Department of Education and the schools that your student is applying to is going to assess the household's ability to pay a certain amount towards their college education.
Right.
And where that is lacking from coming from the household, then the school or the federal government can help meet the need then, which is, again, something different from any other financial goal. You know, outside of Social Security for retirement, there is no one else really trying to meet your need. You have to save that for that gap of income yourself. For college, you have scholarships, you have foundations, you have federal aid, you have student loans. So there's a lot of resources, and you a lot of people don't understand what those resources are. How do you get access to them? Should you get access to them? How do you manage them? How much? And that's where planning comes in. And everyone's situation is different. So as far as getting started, you got to start sort of meeting you where you are. You got to start where you are and recognize once you realize, okay, I haven't done anything, start getting help, whether it's, you know, getting the book, reading it and creating your own plan, or reaching out and getting a, you know, having a consultation and having a professional help you create a plan. You have to, you know, start when you have that nugget in your mind, like now.
So Nikki, that's a very good segue, and I'd like to bring Dr. Murray in, because I believe that the battlefield is the mind, and that once you create a scenario where you have a mindset of saving, whether it's for college or anything else, that's sort of the first step to get you on that journey. And so, Dr. Murray, just wondering, with all the parents and families that you work with, how do you create that environment where the mindset, you know, starts to make a paradigm shift? And then also just wondering, because traditionally, you know, and of course the African-American community is not monolithic, but we're seen as consumers versus savers. And so how does that conversation, is that conversation different when you're talking to an African-American family?
Good question. I think the key thing when I talk to families is to make sure that they recognize that if they are in the late stage, they have scholars who are in middle or in high school thinking about college, that they don't panic. Wherever they are, however much they have saved or haven't saved up to that point, giving them some comfort that there are still strategies, there are still things that you can do to prepare, to plan, to financially get organized, to get their scholars to that next phase, and not be overwhelmed by it. There's a lot of information out there available, And one of the things that our book does is helps to streamline that information so that people get practical strategies and information to help create a plan. In general, in our communities, you see a range of individuals and families in terms of their financial preparedness for college. And in many cases, folks are looking for money. When I wrote the first book, College Planning Strategies, I went out and talked to a bunch of folks. And really the focus was on how to get into college. And then you quickly learn that getting accepted is one thing, but funding it and paying for it is a whole nother conversation. And that's the conversation that makes a difference between families and students actually going to the school, Maryland school versus a North Carolina school, and having those tough conversations. One of the things that Nicole and I introduce in the book is go where you can afford and take the pressure off. And I tell students this when I talk to them, as well as their parents. I tell parents don't feel bullied in a sense into having to fund a school that you absolutely can't afford, or you're, you know, robbing yourself from your retirement to fund your child's education. But I also put some of the responsibility on students to understand where they are financially and their family is financially. And also to be practical as they're narrowing down their school choices, that they have to be thinking about how much those schools cost. What's the cost of attendance? And once you have that information, then you can have a more informed conversation as a family to say, here's our total financial situation. We haven't saved as much for different reasons. And believe it or not, many families are in that situation where either they have saved, have used part of the savings, or just don't have it saved up. But all hope is not lost. And I focus a lot with young people on trying to find free money that you don't have to pay back. Right. One of our premises is to help students to, as much as possible, graduate debt free, or at least try to reduce the amount of debt that they have to pay graduating from college. And part of that is about putting together a plan. So if you haven't saved, that's okay. What do you do if you're in a late stage and you're in that situation? How do you take advantage of your tax situation, your family situation, interest, skills that you have, abilities you have, other resources, people in your local community to find other means and resources? The difference between those who have a financial need, who are able to fill that need, and those who are not, is in many cases the level of effort they're willing to put into the process, whether it's reaching out and getting a certified or qualified, you know, financial planner, or and or being deliberate and strategic about doing research, finding out what they need to do, putting together a plan that's not overwhelming, a simple but realistic plan to be able to close that gap. I talk a lot about scholarships. And one of the things I tell young people is, if you have a 3.0 or higher, you shouldn't have to pay to go to school. There's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of organizations and entities who are looking for STEM students and other students, performing arts, you name it, to give funding to. But you're not, it's not going to knock on your door. You actually have to go reach out and seek it out in many cases.
So Dr. Murray and Nicole, did you find, and of course, I don't want to give away too much of the book because we want people to buy it. But did you find that, or in your book, do you list sites or organizations that students and their families can go to in order to explore these scholarship and other financial opportunities?
For sure. There's two chapters dedicated to one to scholarship searching and another to the scholarship application process. And, you know, Chrissy can go into more detail on that. But, you know, before she does, I just want to say that, you know, the thing that both the parents and students, and it's really sort of emphasizing what Dr. Christie just said, is that they really need to understand is it's work. I relay to my students and parents that, you know, I do planning with, is that the scholarship process, finding free money, people willing to give you money, is like you need to make it a part-time job. Okay. And you can earn much more than you can having a part-time job at, you know, at your age, getting paid, you know, probably the maximum, you know, maybe $11 to $15 an hour. Imagine you spent those same hours doing the scholarship search, filling out applications, applying for a number of scholarships, because it's, you know, it's about the numbers. I mean, if you think about it, if I only get 20% of the scholarships that I apply for, and, you know, that means I get $5,000 and I've spent, what, 10 hours to do right. that work. That is so much more than you could ever earn working a part-time job making $11 an hour, okay? Right. And have that mindset of creating a routine that, you know, every Saturday for these 3 hours, I dedicate my time to scholarship search. And during the week, I dedicate these many hours to actually filling out applications, updating my spreadsheet, tracking, and everything like that. So, you have to, and that's part, that's an additional part to the whole plan for getting college funding, is making that plan for how you're going to search for that free money. And Dr. Christy can talk about the resources and some of the things that go into that process.
And what I'll say is, if you look at strategy 7 and 8 in our book, you will find a whole section that talks about how to search for scholarships. And to answer your question, Ms. Peters, there's search portals and websites that we list and we call out in our book. And if you go to our websites, I know on my website, investintheothers.com, there is a list of almost 200 scholarships that I hear about, know about, that I continue to populate on my website. But also in our book, we do offer some great resources for families to be able to go and search for scholarships. And then I want to piggyback on what Nicole talked about with how to use your time. And I tell families and I tell students this, you can either sacrifice early with your time or you'll sacrifice later with your money. And really the choice is yours, or with what you want to accomplish with your hopes and dreams. But nothing about this process is going to come easy. You're going to have to be, you know, be willing to put in some level of work and reach out and get assistance and ask for help as you need to. Also, we have a whole section in the book where we talk about maximizing your time, strategy 9. And that really focuses on, we actually offer a checklist based on the student's grade level and what stage of the college funding process they're in, that gives you practical things that you need to be doing as you are, if you're a parent of a young child, how to start saving early. And then as you progress to the late and the spending stages, there are some more immediate things you need to be thinking about because you have more of a sense of urgency around getting those things done. In fact, when I talk to juniors and seniors in high school, I ask them, you know, around this time of the year, what are you doing to use your summer to your benefit? Mm-hmm. Capture time. You're not in school right now. You have probably more free time than, like, my sons know what to do with. And how do you do exactly what Nicole said? If you make a plan and say, I'm going to look for 2 scholarships a day, and you did that every day across the summer, you can increase that. However, maybe based it off of hours instead of a number of scholarship searches, for example, or other searches that may be practical and useful, you would be surprised what kind of low effort but high impact that could have by the end of the summer. So I think it's very critical to be realistic about, I've had folks come to me and say, hey, can you help find me scholarships? I can, but here's the problem with that. I only have so many hours in a day that has to be spread very thin over many different things, as we all have to experience. But nobody is going to search harder for you than you will. Yeah. Nobody knows what you're good at, what your talents and your abilities are. And then the misconception that only students with high GPAs and high scholastic test scores get scholarships is false. People are giving out scholarships because what you may want to major in, what professions you're thinking about, what your interests are, what you're good at. If you're an actress, if you like to sing, if you play a guitar, if you're left-handed, if you're right-handed, if you have disabilities, if you're interested in any of the military academies or organizations, there's money for almost anything you can think of if you're willing to go out and look for it.
Can you just share with us, like, for instance, if you have a student like Dr. Murray and I have rising sophomores, and that, you know, there's a sense, well, we, you know, woe is me, I should have done thus and so, so that there would have been something in place for my freshmen. But it sounds like what you ladies are saying is that really it's never too late. That there are opportunities out there, regardless of your students' classification, or if students are listening, regardless of your classification, there is still money available out there. Can you just, you know, just give us some insight on that, just so that people feel hopeful?
The first thing that you want to do is recognize that the financial aid process is an annual process,
right?
And it's every year except for the last year that your student is planning on matriculating in college. So that's one reason why we say it, in a sense, it is never too late, as long as your student is still going to have another year of school. You have to fill out the financial aid form again after October 1st to try to qualify for aid. So when you you say, oh, okay, so I have to do this every year, and you know now with, okay, he's coming into his sophomore year, where we find the money for sophomore year. And then if you don't do anything different, you're going to be in the same situation going into junior year, right? Mm-hmm. So the first thing, even before you start necessarily thinking about scholarships, and I'll sort of make a caveat to that, because your student and you can help, should always be looking for scholarships. As long as they have another year of school, they should always be looking for scholarships. Organizations have different scholarships that they're pushing out, different due dates. You know, there's some more local organizations usually put their scholarships out in the winter and spring. More larger or national organizations are usually during the summer, and the due dates are September, October. The schools that your student needs to go to their financial aid office or to their department at their school while they're there and say, hey, I know I'm going to need money for next year. What are the scholarships? What GPA do I have to have to be able to qualify for more money, because we have this gap? So let's go back to the gap. How do you know what your gap is going to be or is? I mean, you might already know that because you knew what your gap was for sophomore year. Is it going to be the same for junior year? So let's figure that out now and go back and do that college funding process. What is our financial aid going to look like when we fill it out after October 1st, okay? Mm-hmm. And that's something that when I do college funding planning consults, I help the family to understand, based off of this new information for this coming year, your income tax information for this year they'll be using 2019. So let's look at 2019, let's look at the assets that you have, and let's figure out what your expected family contribution is going to look like going into junior year. Then that's the money that they feel like you are going to be able to come up with. And then let's compare that to how much need you have falling out of that. So that's basically your cost of attendance for your school that you already have and can sort of inflation adjust and know what it's going to be for next year. You subtract out what they think you can pay of that expected family contribution, and that's your need. So now you have a track record of how much need has the school been meeting. If they've only been meeting 60% of the need, then you know that your expected family contribution is what they give you plus what they don't meet in need. And now this is the money that you have to come up with. And doing that, both the parent and the scholar understanding, okay, so our need is, or what we have to come up with is $15,000, all right? So then the scholar has a target, so that when they then say, what do I need to find for scholarships? My target is $15,000. Mm-hmm. And that somewhat makes it a little bit easier and less nebulous for the student to be going for scholarships, right? So if I have a target of $15,000, then I need to go for about this much money if I think that I'm going to get 20% of the money that I go for, and that's going to meet that $15,000. Sometimes it's hard for a student if they don't have a specific goal or know, all right, so how much money do I need? Like, you know, the bucket is open, then it's like too heavy to even want to do anything. But if you say, look, I just need you to come up with $10,000, right? They can start figuring out, okay, so if I get $5,000 worth of scholarships and then I work and make $2,000, you know, I, you know, can ask this family member for, you know, whatever, they can start helping piece it together. So it's not just the parent trying to piece that together. So that's, that's one thing that I would do, even if you're already in the spending stage, which is where you are.
Right.
And then follow the scholarship.
I tell you, you all have dropped some great nuggets. I mean, the one thing that kind of jumps out at me is really making the student part of the process, like the onus of you going to this school that you just have to go to is that you then help find a way to fund it, right? And then that also kind of makes the payment piece more less abstract, because it's like, oh, well, my mom will just write a check or my dad will just write a check. It's like, okay, well, where do you think we're getting this money from to write the check? Just like I asked my son when I called down to his school and asked the engineering school about scholarships, you know, I'm laying it all out.
He should be doing that.
Yeah, huh?
I said, he should be doing that.
He should be doing that. And so then they say, well, we send out scholarship information before each semester starts for our department. And so I asked him, I said, did you get an email with some scholarship? He said, well, I may have. And I'm thinking, you may have. Boy, how do you think that we're going to keep paying for this? It can't. If you may have. So, you know, I helped him understand that you have to be more assertive, aggressive, or whatever, as it relates to us, you know, being able to continue to fund your education. You know, I'm all in, you know, two or three jobs or whatever I need to do, but you need to be all in too. You need to be all in too. So I appreciate, you know, just having, you know, kind of convicting me that I need to convict him that that's what he needs to do. The other piece is really making sure that they understand, or families understand, students understand that it's a job, it's work. Like, we want everything so easily.
Get paid,
can't you find the scholarships for me?
And, you know, that was one of the toughest things I had to realize with my son when he first went off to school last fall. At what point am I helping and at what point am I in hindrance?
Right.
They can't grow and mature if we continue to own all these processes for them. We take the lead. And I'm starting, it was difficult as I started to shift my role as more of a support advisor. I'm here to offer some resources. As you've demonstrated that you've tried to work towards getting some of these things yourself and putting them more in the driver's seat. And we talk about this a bit in the book about, we have a whole chapter designated that's focused on understanding your responsibilities, because this is a very important point. And as much as parents and guardians, we wanna be helpful, we also have to give them an opportunity to demonstrate that A, how bad do you want it? B, how much do you want to invest in yourself, and what kind of work you're willing to put into that process? I'll give you an example. When I went to school years ago, I had a set of older twin sisters who were in school, and they were in college, and my mother was in graduate school, and she told me, hey, look, if you want to go to, I want to go to Hampton University. And it was a private college, cost more than my in-state. And we went back and forth because she says, I can't afford it. I don't know how you're going to make it happen. I know you want to be an engineer. You want to go to Hampton. I had to do my part. And so I'm very passionate. And as my sons grew up, I told them as young boys, you will have to do something to work towards that. I can hand it to you. But in my experience with my young people, they generally don't appreciate things as much when it's 100% given to them without them having to put any sweat equity into it.
Right.
And so they have to be able to put sweat equity into the process. And I'll tell you, if you're in the late stage or even spending stage, no, all hope is not lost. I agree. So Nicole, she mentioned you have to sit down and figure out the gap between what the cost of attendance is, how much you can pay, how much the school is giving, and what's that need that hasn't been met yet, and then putting together a plan around it. And if it, and if you can, and willing, if you're willing to go out and look for scholarships, they're out there. But I'll tell you, many scholarship entities communicate via email. Many schools communicate via email. And to your point, Jan, I experienced my son was getting all kind of emails his first year at school that A, never got to me, and B, he probably never even opened.
Right.
And so one of the key takeaways for me with this generation, and you have to think about things generationally. Get that word out. Because we, as a parent, I check my email daily.
Right.
But I didn't realize that my son's generation, they're not necessarily, email is not their first means. They don't wake up in the morning and check email.
Group chat. They do not.
They're chatting, they're DMing, they're doing, you know, short character type communications through social media. And so that's a disconnect in and having to provide them with more guidance. I've had to have conversations with my son about, you should check your email. And one of the things I tell students now is set up a separate email for your school business outside of your normal personal email. That way, and then give us both access to the email, the username and the password.
Yes.
So that there's at least some transparency and visibility into that process so that things don't get missed in the process. Because I think that's a big piece. You can have money sitting there, someone waiting for you to accept, and you haven't checked.
You haven't, yeah. So all this is such great information. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you both to share with us, how can people be in touch with you and how can we get that book?
All right. So you can get in touch with each of us via our own emails or our websites. My website is www.thecollegemoneyteam.com. I have a store on my website where I sell the book, and Dr. Christie, she has a store on her site where you can also buy the book. Dr. Christie, you want to tell your what your site is?
Sure. It's scrolling now, Invest in Others, INVEST, the letter N, OTHERS.com. And the books are also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, et cetera, but you get a better discount if you buy from one of our websites.
Right. And, then, and it's the book and it's a workbook, right?
And so you only can get the workbook from our websites, and you can get that as a bundle or individually. The other thing too, I do in free or complimentary initial consultations. They're usually about 45 minutes long. If you reach out to me via email, if you buy the book and get the information that way, you can request an initial consultation. Also on, I believe, both of our websites, whenever we're doing educational webinars or workshops, we post those. And so you can come in, get more information about the college funding process, specifically on my website, or when I do presentations, mine are strictly for college funding planning. Dr. Christie also does college admissions planning and counseling workshops, but I will do an initial consultation to help families understand what that expected family contribution may be and what their next steps for their customized situation should be based off of, you know, what their expectation of money might be. So if they reach out to me through Nicole@collegemoneylady.com. My Instagram is @collegemoneylady as well. If they reach out to me and want to do an initial consultation, we can set that up virtually. I work with families across the US.
So in this virtual environment, regardless of where Nicole Cole and Dr. Christie Murray are, they can work with you. And you heard Nicole offer a complimentary initial session to help you on your way. Ladies, I want you to know how much I appreciate your time this morning. I know that there was someone who's going to be blessed by the information that you're dropping. I value the fact that you were able to compile all this information in a book, so we don't have to go across the world wide web looking for it. We can just go right to your book. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you for doing this.
You're welcome.
in
the
world.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yes, yes. I just love it. And when you write your next book, let me know and I'll bring you back on, meeting you where you are. Nikki knows she's always welcome. She's always welcome. So just want to remind people that all the information that you received about where to find these ladies, it'll be in a link in our bio or in the narrative underneath of the posting when we post on Podomatic, SoundCloud, and the Apple Podcast app. And so just remember to like, share, and subscribe, because the whole wide world needs to know about Nicole Cole and Dr. Christy Murray. So until we meet again, I'd like to share with you my parting quote from the fantastic Michelle Obama. The only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams and your willingness to work hard for them, which I think is a great, great closing for the words that you've given us this this day. Thank you, ladies, and enjoy your Tuesday. And until we meet again, be safe.
Thank you. You do the same.